Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's February 5th, 2013. That's our great new theme song by the Beer Amigos. You can check them out. They're on Long Island. They have a podcast. Thanks so much. And hey, I'm here with Jen Swartman from Blind Tiger.
How are you, Jen? I'm doing really well. How about you?
It's always great having you on the show.
It's great to be here always.
Jimmy's number 43. And thanks so much to GreatBrewers.com for sponsoring us. It's a great place to go to learn more about beer. Our guest tonight is one of your buddies and my buddies, Tommy Harder, the chef at Blind Tiger Ale House in
Our fantastic chef.
So people don't usually associate beer bars with good food, but you and Blind Tiger have been doing something that has taken people's notice. A couple years ago, the New York Times, Eric Asimov, wrote about good beer bars with food, and I know that Blind Tiger was mentioned. How did you end up working at Blind Tiger, and tell us about some of the dishes that you're cooking with beer, because I know that's one of your specialties.
Yeah, well, I actually, working at Blind Tiger, it actually all started basically just an answer to a Craigslist ad. Came to an interview and was sitting there drinking a beer with the guys.
I can actually speak to the process to get to that point a bit, because I know that Dave, you know, as a visionary of the Blind Tiger, the one who, Dave Broderick, who's on the show a lot, and who is our, like, you know, the main partner for the Blind Tiger, just because it was his vision that created the beer bar back in 96. He's always looking forward and has, like, great ideas. And he really saw that there was this niche that wasn't quite being filled in New York. And, I mean, it's something that goes back to a lot of brew pubs, too, where it's really extraordinary when you have the combination of everything coming together. A really great chef who's really conscientious and really great brewers putting out really phenomenal beer. And when that comes together, it's magic. And a lot of times, you know, the food is just an afterthought. The beer is really They're focusing on. Sometimes the opposite, where they throw in a brewery just for kicks and it's really about the food. But when it's all, when you're paying attention to the quality of all of it, then it can really be fun and magical. And so in this case, we saw that beer bars in New York really were not embracing the food, you know. And so when we were at a crossroads and we were looking for a chef, I know from discussions I heard and just talking to Dave that he really was hoping to find the right fit and somebody who could take us up a notch and push us further. Because Louise, who designed the first menu, did a phenomenal job. And we were suddenly known for our food in spite of ourselves, because we really did, you know, like, have to have a kitchen in the new space when we moved. And so it's like, hey, you went to culinary school. You want to design some food that goes with beer? And she did such a great job that it meant that we became known as a food establishment. And yet we still weren't taking it to, like, we weren't becoming more sophisticated with it. And so that's when Tommy came in, and we were so lucky to find him. So you just answered a Craigslist ad.
Yeah, it was really. And I mean, I didn't know anything much about Blind Tiger itself beforehand. Like, I've only been in New York for probably about, I'm a little over 3 years now, but at the time I was only here for about a year. I actually moved from the Caribbean. I was down in Turks and Caicos Islands before this, working for Club Med resorts. And so I spent actually about 2 years between Florida and the Caribbean.
Before that, I
go back to the West Coast. I'm originally from Idaho, but I grew up in Portland, Oregon. And that's where I kind of did most of my cooking.
That's what I'm doing right now.
and he also has a background. He worked for a brew pub out there, too.
Yeah. So I'm eating pizza. And then at Roberta's, they have great pizza. It's pizza with some meat on top. Yep. And we thought, since Tommy was coming on, first we would eat with our beer today, because we're usually drinking beer. And we started with, I had the Firestone Pale Ale 31. And Jen, what did you open?
The Winter 13 from Hopton Dormal. It's a wet hopped Belgian farmhouse, and it's phenomenal. I've never had it before this moment, and it's really, really nice.
So I think that eating with when I'm drinking is natural. I like to eat when I drink. So, you know, let's go in that direction. So cooking with beer. On the menu at Blind Tiger, what dishes do you have that are made with beer?
Oh, actually, I have about six different dishes. Especially during the wintertime here, I do a lot more of, like, slow roasted, braising kind of items. So I have, like, two items. I have a lamb shepherd's pie that's braised in beer. I take the lamb, the stew, and actually cook it in the beer. With the Blind Tiger, there's definitely a lot of adaptations I have to go along with having such a small kitchen, all that kind of stuff. So instead of, like, using stocks and making stocks, I don't have a whole lot of space to do kind of stuff like that. So I do definitely have a great variety of beer to use. And so I can use the beer as a flavor base, as a liquid base for a lot of, like, the stews and all that kind of stuff I do. Excuse me. One of the probably, like, the most asked for dishes is actually a beer cheese soup that I make. And it's a potato beer cheese soup, but instead of using, like, any liquid or stock as, like, the base to make the soup, it's all beer. And I usually use a combination of different beers just kind of give out different nuances and kind of, you know, control the hoppiness and the bitterness if I use certain beers or not. So,
and what kind of cheese do you use?
That one I just use, it's a sharp white cheddar. So it's not, you know, everything's pretty, really straightforward, very simple. It's just, you know, potatoes, onions, carrots, celery, and beer and cheddar cheese. But it is an awesome dish. Like, every time I make it, I have people always going crazy for it. Every winter, they're asking when I'm going to bring it back. And it's definitely, yeah, it's taken on its own just by, you know, using these different combinations of the beers as well. On top of that, I always have my, it's a Pilsner brined chicken wings. Without having a fryer at Blind Tiger, we actually had to think kind of out of the box and how we're going to do wings. And so one of the things is that they're fully baked wing. So we actually...
They've been written up. We've gotten write-ups about those wings. Around Super Bowl time a couple years ago, there was a big, like, you know, comparing wings. And they gave little chicken wings. And we got one of the top scores for these wings. And they are, like, perfect spiciness, you know, classic buffalo sauce. But the fact that they are not deep fried...
Yeah, I mean, that
changes everything. They take a while sometimes. People start getting antsy. I'm like, you know what? They are worth the wait.
Yeah, they do. They do end up taking like 15 minutes to it every time we get an order for one. But we have to kind of let people know. It's like, yeah, well, you're waiting for the good quality. That's why they're why they are. And we brined them in Pilsner first. Just being like a lighter beer helps actually season the meat and really add a lot of like juiciness to it as well. And you can almost kind of taste it. If you had a plain one, you could taste the beer in the meat itself. But just from soaking it in a salty beer solution for several hours, it, you know, creates a luscious, nice, juicy chicken wing. So that was, you know, that's one of the main dishes. Another one that we do right now is beef short rib SOS. And so what now I took is a classic SOS dish that's usually was just like, you know, chuck beef on a piece
blank
of bread.
Blank on a shingle.
Yeah, blank
is on what a shingle. He's talking SOS, and it's a military thing, and I didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah, it's a blank on a shingle, but I actually turned it into a short rib on a shingle.
Yeah.
It's not
up.
Just like dry, it's not like braised dry beef.
Yeah, exactly. It's
They are rich and decadent.
Yeah. So what we do there is actually we take usually a darker beer, like a stout or a porter, which usually really goes really well with, like, you know, gamier meat. And we braise beef short ribs in the stout beer and then turn around and take that liquid base and make that into a mushroom gravy, adding a bunch of wild mushrooms and stuff like that to, level off that sauce. But, you know, using the liquid as also now it's the beer's the sauce base.
You know, in certain countries, I mean, there's definitely beer cuisine, you know, Belgium, Germany. Yeah. When you're talking about the beer cheese soup, that's something that I've seen in a lot of German cookbooks.
Yeah.
It's cool, like, as craft beer is expanding, like our friends Johnny and Jessica are important Spanish craft beers. We did a Spanish craft beer dinner last week, and it was great to see how the flavors of, you know, Spain can meld with beer. So I feel like beer goes with all cuisines. And I love hearing you talk about cooking with it, too, because I like to cook with it, too.
Yeah, definitely.
When I first started cooking, I used to always cook with wine, and then once I opened Jimmy's Number 43, same thing, having beer around, I started putting beer in everything, tomato sauce, chili.
Yeah.
You know, I do a pasta with bacon and onions and beer and cream.
Yeah, and I mean, I've played around, too, and I've actually made, like, instead of making, like, a beurre blanc sauce, I've made a mead blanc. So you would basically think it's a white wine butter sauce, something that's really... you know, light and rich and usually kind of tangy. Kind of do it. Usually it goes really well with, like, you know, fish dishes and stuff like that. I was just playing around because we have mead there at Blind Tiger. And I'm like, well, let me see if I can't make, like, a sauce out of this. And so it was just, you know, from, like, experimentation and kind of thinking outside the box and where I could substitute beer or mead or, you know, some kind of alcohol base like that for something else that I would use wine.
Okay, so let's say I'm cooking something like shrimp with garlic. And I might finish it with white wine. What beers would I use to finish it with instead of wine?
Instead of wine, I mean, you could definitely use, with shrimp, you know, being it's a lighter fish or a lighter seafood, you know, you don't want to, like, overpower it with, like, a dark beer or something like that. So usually a lighter beer always will go really well with it. Something like, even if you go to as far as doing, like, wit ale or, you know, somewhere like my Belgian
PA. Oh, wit
PA.
Would be good, a Belgian wit.
Yeah, I would actually like to do with that, too, is, like, kind of making, you're making, like, drunken shrimp or, you know, camarones borracho, so, you know, like a Spanish dish, and it's something that's done in, like, you know, Latin cultures and
stuff. Is
that
a real dish, camarones borrachos?
Yeah, but they usually, you know, they use...
I would get Mexican that dish. If that was on your menu, I would totally get it. Camarones borrachos.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it translates to drunken shrimp, but using, like, even more of, like, an amber, and then, like, you also add a lot more spice and flavor for, like, you know, kind of making more Latin, so, like, you know, cumin and... You know, chili peppers, they usually have a lot more flavor to them. They go really well with, like, you know, a lighter, medium in the range of beers. Like, I say amber's, like, always kind of be in the middle because of, like, the, not the flavor profile, but the color profile they are. Darker beer's going to have more of, like, these coffee espresso notes, where lighter beer's going to have, you know, can be a lot, you know, it's almost the exact opposite in the spectrum of things. But amber's always kind of right in the middle, really lend themselves to go with really well with a lot of different things. And shrimp as well, like, it's, you know, it's got its own flavor, but it goes, you can do it so many different ways that, you know, it depends on how you want to make a taste. And, yeah, I'd actually like to make that dish.
I was thinking you should cook five different shrimp dishes with five different beers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That would be.
And see how
it
turns out.
Are there any dishes at Blind Tiger that really stand out for you, Jen, that you really recommend to customers a lot?
All the time. Well, fortunately, our menu now changes seasonally, thanks to Tommy. And so we end up with kind of a rotation of things instead of one menu that people love, but they kind of get tired of. One of the things he does, instead of having a proprietary chili, he does a chili of the day, which usually lasts a few days, depending on the season.
4 or 5 days.
So it lasts 4 or 5 days, and then he'll switch it out and do something different, and it's really fun, because just when I think, like, oh my gosh, there's no way he's going to outdo himself, the next one comes around, and it's like, how do you keep doing this, you know? So that's really fun and always different, and people look at that and the grilled cheese of the day, you know, that changes.
Well, that's fun, grilled cheese of the day. I like that.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, then there's some brunch items. We have a Sunday brunch. It's only on Sunday at this point. I don't work on Sundays anymore, so I miss it most of the time, but there's this, like, there's, I can't remember what you call it.
The brotherly love, the dish that I made for my brother
back
10 years ago, maybe, when I was still in culinary school, I created this dish one Sunday, and it was just out, you know, reading from cookbooks and stuff like that. I decided to kind of put this together this way, a certain way, and it's a cheddar bacon potato pancakes, but it's made kind of like a Napoleon. It's stacked with sautéed mushrooms,
spinach.
Rosemary ham, sautéed spinach, not mushrooms.
Spinach, rosemary ham, and then... egg.
They did another potato pancake, so it's kind of like a little cake stacked on top of each other. And then it's got a poached egg and a mornay sauce, which is just saying a white cheese sauce.
And
it's rotates.
The brunch menu is different every week. However, there are certain things that come back. And I haven't been around for that week in a while, and I'm missing that dish. So, he's got a few that are favorites of mine. But really, everything that's coming out of that kitchen is really fun and interesting. And we had an event. The new thing we're doing now, and Tommy can probably talk about it more, what the plan is to have a dish that's sort of the dish to pair with the event. So we'll have like a brewery event, and then he's going to come up with, kind of knowing what they do, come up with a special dish that sort of just runs the course of its day or two. And the first one he did was a lobster, or a seafood, but mostly lobster.
No, it was straight lobster.
A lobster chowder. And it was just like, I came in and everyone was like, buzzing about the chowder, and I was like, is there any left? And he's like, it's gone, but you can have the last little bit. So I got the last taste, and it was honestly like I just stood there quietly in the past just eating this and just worshiping it. So congratulations on all the successes.
Yeah, like she said with that, where we actually decided to do this year differently from what we have done in the past is now incorporating like a weekly special to kind of go once a month with the beer events we have. We always have beer events on either on Wednesdays or Sundays, and we do like, you know, two or three in a month. What now we're going to do is take one of those and actually make I'm a design a dish to kind of really either represent something about the brewery or to be something that could be paired with some of the beers that they're going to have on tap at that time. And which is kind of a difficult thing because it's hard to make a dish that will, you know, pair nicely with four or five different kinds of beers or even, you know, 12 beers or something like that. It's like they always say have such a different variety that it's kind of hard to make a dish for all of them. But, you know, with that idea, we, you know, I can do a lot of different things where I could even do like small bites and like we'll kind of really, you know, have a different range as well of even the dish itself and all that kind of stuff. I have a plenty of ideas, but don't know how I'm going to all execute them and when they're going to happen. But next one coming up here is actually the 13th with Omegon Brewery. Coming, and then they have their event, so I'm going to be making a dish to go.
Do you know what you're going to make it for that?
I don't, actually.
Well, hold on a second. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes and hear more about Tommy's Dishes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, guys. Good night.
This one's called My Used to Be by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Do you know you can join and become a member? Go to heritageradionetwork.org. Sign up. We need membership, and you can get special benefits from it. All right, I'm here in the studio with Jen Schwartman and Tommy Harder from Blind Tiger Ale House. We're talking about cooking with beer, and we've got a phone guest, a good buddy of Jen's, and I've met him as well, Roger Davis. He's opening a Faction Brewing out in Alameda, California.
Hi, Roger.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
How are you, buddy?
You.
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I mean, I could be better if I had a brewery up and running, but
how's it going?
We can get into that.
Well, let's talk about the big story. So we know that you had been a brewer. You worked at Triple Rock, and there was a place called Drake's as well?
Yes. I basically, I've been a professional brewer since 97. I worked at a place in San Francisco called San Francisco Brewing Company, which has since closed. And then I worked at Pyramid. And then I moved on to Drake's and then Triple Rock. And now I'm hopefully this will be the last brewery I work at, which, you know, is Faction.
The big story that I'll say is when I met you, it was so cool because, you know, Jen introduced us, and you came by my place, Jimmy's number 43. But you came out to the East Coast to buy a brewing system. Tell us about how that happened, how you made the introduction, and it's such a cool thing,
and what
thing,
system
right?
It is.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, actually, I have known Scott Vaccaro over at Captain Lawrence for a number of years. I worked with one of his school buddies when they were at UC Davis, and then Scott went on to Sierra, and his buddy came and worked with me at Drake's. So I was introduced to Scott at that point, and that was in 2001 or maybe 2002. But then, obviously, I've known Scott for many years, and then saw him out in Denver. And we got to talking about his brewery, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to upgrade, and I'm getting a 40-barrel system. I'm moving, like, 5 miles down the road. Told me the whole story of what he was doing the last couple of years. Like, this was in 2010, I guess. And I was I just asked him, you know, like, what are you going to do with your used equipment? And he's like, well, I'm going to sell it. It's like, can you sell it to me? And handshake deal right there on the spot in Falling Rock in Denver, which is, kind of the go-to bar when you're at the GABF. And it pretty much lit a fire under my wife and I's butts to go ahead and get the business plan all together. And
so you knew that it was a plan that you were going to open your own brewery, but you just hadn't gotten that serious about it yet, like taking the time?
Exactly. You know, I left Drake's in 2008 to focus on, because everyone gets in these little ruts in life where you're doing the same thing and you're like, you're getting away from like the big goal.
Yeah.
And my big goal was always to open a brewery. So I left Drake's thinking that would be like the fire under my butt to like, you know, get this thing going to open my own brewery. And it just was bad timing. So then I ended up going back into brewing, and that's when I got the job at Triple Rock. And about a year and a half or 2 years into that, I was like, wow, I'm back in this rut that I didn't want to be in. And that's right when we saw Scott. So it was like, whoa.
Yep.
Well, Roger, let's talk about your journey to get this brewing system, because I think that's cool. And it represents like what's cool about being a brewer in America. So you tell us the whole trip. You drove to the East Coast. How did you just tell us this whole little nitty gritty stuff, because I love it.
Well, I've known Scott for many years, and then he was like, "Well, I'm not gonna sell it to you unless you come out." So my wife and I came out in April of 2011, and we hung out. He showed us all the equipment. We're like, "Okay, we'll take it." Blah blah blah. You know, just tell us what you want to charge us, and we'll start raising the money. And so we got to that, and then I came out again in February of last year, and that's when we just kind of ripped it out of his old building up in Westchester.
Yeah, I saw you on that trip. And you brought out your GC too, right? Or a contractor sort of friend?
Yeah. I brought out a contractor because it turns out I'm really good at taking things apart, but putting them back together is not really my forte.
So somebody with another set of eyes to figure
exactly.
It out. Yeah, very good.
Someone that could take pictures, or I just rip it all apart and be like, all right, where's the box we put this in? And
yeah, I'm missing some bolts.
So what did you do? Did you drive it back?
Spare parts.
Did you drive it back in a truck, or did you have it shipped?
We ended up having it shipped. We ended up buying pretty much everything that he had up in Westchester, because Pleasantville.
Yeah.
Pleasantville is where he was.
Yep.
He basically bought all new stuff. So everything that was on his old site was for us to take. So
you got pretty much what you need, right?
It was about 5 truckloads.
Wow.
But what I don't know about brewing in America, so you came all the way from California to New York to buy a used brewing system. So first of all, it must have been a good deal.
Well, I mean, it was a good deal, but
it's also
nowadays,
karma.
With all these breweries popping up, if you can even buy something on the used market, it's basically gone within like 5 minutes of them posting it on a forum.
So there's
plus
scarcity.
He also knew that there was like, by knowing Scott, he knew that Scott had taken care of his system. That, you know, I mean, there's a certain, that's important too, to like not take on equipment.
I knew it was obviously producing great beer, and just knowing Scott would take care of it, the whole nine yards, and it was really the size that we were looking for too. It's a 20-barrel system, which is a great system for production to start up at.
Now you hadn't found the space for the brewery yet. You bought the equipment, and of course, you still had to find a place to house it.
Yes, that's where the whole dilemma came in.
Yeah, but you managed to. I mean, you're on track now. I mean, I know that took a while, but you know, where are you?
Unfortunately, the brewery is still in storage right now. We are hitting a lot of red tape, just BS that basically is we didn't anticipate.
It's always got to be
like
something.
I said, we were out there in February and took it out, and we actually stored it in New York for about 3 months. And then I found a place out here in Santa Rosa, which is about an hour and a half north of us, who could store it. So that's where it's sitting now. But we basically, we haven't even started constructing the brewery yet.
So, Roger, also, tell us about the choices and the effort you put into choosing a location for a brewery.
Well, we actually, I wanted to move to this, or move the brewery to this place called Richmond, which is, it's not really the nicest part of the Bay Area, but we would have been the first brewery to ever open there. So we actually had this building. It was all picked out. We were going back and forth with the landlord, and basically they were offering it for anywhere between 55 and 65 cents. So we came in like 55 cents a square foot.
Uh-huh.
And they came back at like 75 cents. We're like, all right, screw this. So that night, Claudia, my wife, was just on the internet, and she woke me up at like 2 in the morning. She was like, I found the location. And it's this place that is literally right next door to St. George Spirits, which makes the Hangar 1 vodka, as well as a bunch of other really good spirits. But it's on the old Navy base of Alameda.
It is so a hangar,
I'm actually
right?
looking out right now, and all I see is San Francisco and the Bay Bridge.
Wow, amazing.
And it is like a hangar, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's why
it's
Hangar 1.
It's literally a hangar where they used to put the planes. The building is 65,000 square feet.
Wow.
Yeah.
But we are only taking half of it, so we get 32 and a half. But it's huge. I'll send you guys pictures when I get off the phone.
One thing I read, I mean, we met last year, and it was really great meeting you, but I read some of the, as you were searching for a location, because I know that's a big part of opening a brewery, you said you didn't want to go in an area where you knew other brewers and you didn't want to have to be competing for their tap lines. It sounded really cool. Just tell us more about your philosophy. You know, you've been brewing and buddies with all these other brewers, so now you're on your own. You know, what do you feel like is yours for the taking? You know, and that was really interesting what you said.
I've been in the industry for a long time, and I just don't really want to step on people's toes. You know, I realize how hard it is to sell a beer. And
competition's fierce.
To come in and then like just start taking people off tap and being like, hey, you got to carry my beer, you know, with that philosophy is just, it. I don't think it works very well in today's world. So our whole theory was just to kind of spread out a little bit more because the production, what Scott was doing was about 8,000 barrels. So I figure we can do close to 7,000 barrels. Not right away, obviously. We'll grow into that. But, you know, just kind of, like, spread it out a little bit more and not tread on people's toes and not, like, you know.
But what's great, too, is by sharing the space next door with the distillery, you're not treading, you know, it's not another brewery. It's not direct competition, but it's all very similar mindset.
Yeah,
so it's going to be a destination in Alameda.
Like, two doors down, too. So it's
really?
A cohesive unit now. It's like...
Wow.
We're the final piece of the puzzle.
It's a reason to go to Alameda.
Exactly.
Heck yeah. Maybe they'll have a ferry from San Francisco or something.
Well, yeah, how do you get there from the city?
It's about a 15, 20-minute walk, but it's definitely something that a lot of people do right now going to St. George. And that brings it back to, like, rounding out the whole, like, location thing for us. Is when we were looking at Richmond, we weren't really planning on having a tasting room that was going to be booming. So when we moved over here to Alameda, I mean, literally, when I send you guys pictures, you're going to be like, whoa.
I've seen a picture. You showed me a picture.
We're going to have like
huge.
A deck out here, and it's going to be a booming tasting room.
Wow. Hey, another question. So tell us a little bit about the difficulties you're facing in getting open.
Right now, it's just a lot of it is permits. We've submitted permits. For permitting twice now and gotten rejected twice. There's a lot of things that go on. I mean, we could talk about this for like 3 hours, but right now the city of Alameda does not own the land. The Navy still does. So anything that we do, the city's like, yeah, you can do that, but we have to go see what the Navy says. And the Navy's priority is not faction brewing, obviously. It's, you know, doing other things. So that's, we put in for permitting in July, and we didn't get an answer from the Navy until Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of painful.
Yeah, that's a lot of time.
Actually, the building that we're in is a landmark now, so a lot of stuff has to go to SHPO, which is the State Historical. I don't know what the IPO means, but they took their sweet time. Everyone has like a month to like figure things out, and it seems like they're waiting 29 days.
Sounds like we need to write letters to the president on this one. Wouldn't yeah, that be exactly. fun? That, I mean, that would be a cool campaign. Write a letter to the president and have him support the brewery in Alameda, California.
Exactly.
And yeah. that's what they well, want, right? You turn these old Navy bases into taxpayers, you know?
This hangar that we're in was a Marine hangar on a Navy base. And I had some guy that came out, and he was going to help us with our boiler. But he was actually stationed in this hangar.
Huh.
And he actually, because the Marines, I guess, could give a little bit more protection. All the presidents, when they did their Bay Area trips, came through this hangar, which was kind of cool.
So what, he was having
flashbacks? So there is a lot of history.
Was this guy having flashbacks or something?
Exactly.
Well, we're all for it, but I would say this. I think that you know the government is trying to generate more money, and you know it sounds like they should get moving on getting you guys in there.
Yeah,
I'm all for
I mean,
it.
It's frustrating and a long story, but I won't get completely into it. But hopefully, we just got our second rejection last week, and we have a big meeting with the general contractor and all the subcontractors and the architect and everyone on Thursday. And we just need to hammer it out, get it correct, and then submit and just be like, okay, here
so,
you go.
So the Hangar One guys, I mean, what did they have to go through to get their approval? When they started, I mean, how long? That was quite a while ago, right? How?
Yeah, they have been in the hangar next to us for a little over 10 years, but I think they've been on the base for about 20.
Oh,
so they just kind of moved, and they moved. They closed this base down in '96, and hangar or St. George Spirits moved into the hangar next to us, I believe, in like 2001.
But they were already
so
part of the system. Yeah, so time is on their side, but they were already on naval.
Yeah, it's all
yeah.
very
yeah,
interesting.
They were already on the base.
It's all very interesting, all this stuff. But one thing I did read is that, but you said Alameda, the city, is behind you. So I'm sure that at some point, you know, this will all come together. Roger, yep. will you stay on the line with us? We're going to take a short break.
And of course.
We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
This one's called Heart on the Line by Pamela Royal on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Every Tuesday at 12 p.m., you can call food scientist Dave Arnold and ask any question you want.
John from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave.
Cooking issues!
Who am I fooling?
This is horrible stuff. Without glutamic acid, you die!
It is a matter of taste, but there's a lot more fat in sausage than you think.
Get ahead of the curve. Tune into Cooking Issues every Tuesday at 12 p.m. on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Whose show do you love more than Dave Arnold's Cooking Issues on the Heritage Radio Network? I love, hey, it's Roger from Alameda, California!
Yay.
That's how Dave talks. It's cool. He's got a lot of energy. We got Tommy from Blind Tiger here right now. And so we got Roger on. We're talking about trying to get open in Alameda. You know what we're drinking, Roger? We're drinking these wild stuff, Yeasty Boys from New Zealand. And they have what they call the smokiest beer in the world, the Rex Attitude.
It's very peat smoky.
I think
Scotch.
It's 100%.
It's not like rock. It's not like, yeah, it's a little more ashtray.
Smoked, yeah.
But it goes really well with this pizza, the speck, as Tommy pointed out, the smokiness of the speck on the pizza that we had does kind of, I think the beer benefits from the pizza.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, especially
it's
also
a little overwhelming.
The mushrooms, the blue cheese, all that stuff that's on the pizza also, you know, it's more earthy of a pizza. And so this one definitely lends itself much more to it, but the
food and beer combinations. You're eating something sour beer with fatty food often equals a very balanced flavors. Roger, let's talk a little bit about the California beer scene. Now, I know out here we get beers from Europe and all over, but you've been enmeshed in the California beer scene. So, what else is going out there that you like? You know, what are the small breweries that you really like? And
any
some
newcomers
of the
aside from newcomers? You? That you- are friends with who are doing a really good job?
There's no good beer out here.
Yeah, you guys, yeah, it's been a wasteland for so long.
Yeah, California has nothing going on.
No, there's not so many breweries popping up right now. So much as like a lot of restaurants are turning into multi-taps, which
yeah.
is awesome.
Because, we've seen that here
you
too.
Know,
of course,
a lot of these restaurants realize that rotating the taps is really going to bring people in.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way that everything's shifting out here. Obviously, there's a bunch of breweries opening in San Diego, but you can't really get those beers up here yet. But the Bay Area, I'll be honest, has been pretty stagnant for a little while. Hasn't really been anything opening.
It's really interesting because I have my own theories about that. I go back, you know, at least once a year, and I was like, this is crazy how few beer bars there are in San Francisco, and I'm just like, I don't understand, but I think it's because it's so deeply entrenched that it's taken for granted in ways that it's not taken for granted even in places like San Diego, because that's a relatively new market, a relatively new boom. And it's like, once it gets to that point where, like, I remember going into a brunch place that would close at 3 p.m., you know, and it would have three or four awesome beers on tap. And so I was like, it just is everywhere. And they're local, you know, these great breweries that have been around forever that everyone counts on, their quality's really high, and people just expect to find good beer where they go. So they're not necessarily like eager seeking it out with that fire, where a lot of these new markets, they're so excited. And, you know, we're in New York now where it's like the consumer base is really excited. And so they're just like, they want something new and different all the time. And there's something nice about the maturity of adulthood where you're like, you can like settle into quality and have breweries that are tried and true that you really, you know, that you truly love and know won't let you down. But there's also like this little bit of a lack of interest about anything else. It's a little provincial. And
so what are some of those breweries? I mean, we know Sierra Nevada.
Well, we definitely know Sierra Nevada, but of course you've got
Russian River
and Moonlight.
All over the place out here, and Lagunitas
and Bear Republic, and 21st Amendment is there with their great pub, and now these guys are going to come on the scene, but with a nice pedigree from the region, you know, and so people know Roger and Drake's and Triple Rock, and there are so many great breweries in the region that supply the region really well. And so the consumer market, I think, you know, it's kind of nice to see places like Zeitgeist, which I've always really liked. They have a great garden. They're in the Mission. Mm-hmm. It's always been one of my favorite, besides the Toronado, my favorite beer bar. And they did put in a much bigger tap system, and they have a lot more beer in the last couple of years. And that was good to see, because I felt like that was sort of like they saw their potential to maximize what they were doing and to really promote even more beer. And so that was great. And so it feels like there are a few more breweries, Rosamond opening up their, you know, actual restaurant that's also a beer bar. They're and Pie, those guys are great. I know quite a few. I don't know everyone there, but it seems like there is more of an interest, but it's still kind of interesting how San Francisco, which in many ways is a hub, is like a little bit lackadaisical.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating, to be honest with you. But living in Oakland, where I live.
Oh, Oakland's and then
booming.
Beer Revolution.
I mean, the Trappist is open now, another place in Oakland. They're looking to actually open a place in the city pretty soon as well. Rosa Monday just opened, and they just opened in Brooklyn too, I believe.
Yeah, I saw. Yeah, they did.
But, I mean, there's a lot of things to be said about San Francisco. Obviously, the high rent is probably going to be an issue. So that's like pushing a lot of the restaurateurs right now over here to Oakland.
Right.
Because the rent's a lot cheaper, and Oakland's kind of
Oakland
not necessarily
is like
bending
the Brooklyn.
Over completely backwards, but they're, you know, letting everyone do whatever they want. Whereas in San Francisco, there's a lot of...
Oakland is really the Brooklyn of San Francisco. It's
exactly.
close. It's right over the water, very easy to get to, and still sort of a frontier where, you know, there's some pockets that are super, you know, already really gentrified, but then a lot of expansive space where there's a lot of potential. And so it's super similar. I've always made that analogy.
Roger,
that's a good analogy.
Did you ever find any potential locations for your brewery in Oakland?
We were kind of looking in Oakland, but then that goes back to what I was, my whole philosophy, which was like I didn't want to step on people's toes. There's a couple breweries in Oakland. Oakland, unfortunately, has this this thing where you can't do manufacturing past a certain street, which is like right about downtown. So out in the neighborhoods where everyone lives, you couldn't open a brew pub.
Right.
Because brewing is light manufacturing.
Right.
So all the breweries, like Linden Street, which I can actually, I mean, if I was maybe not Barry Bonds, but Alex Rodriguez, actually he's on steroids too, isn't he?
so I can't keep track.
But you could probably throw a baseball and hit Linden Street, but to drive there is about 20 minutes because we're on the island, you know?
Right.
So it's, I didn't want to get it in anyone's way, you know, it's like, I just respect everyone that's done, who's paved the way, essentially, for us. And
Roger, you're a very cool guy. Let's jump it, because we've got a few minutes left. Tell us about, when you open Faction, you know, do you have some beers in mind that you're going to make first, and what styles of beer will you be making?
Yeah, actually, we did all that in our business plan, which is basically, we're going to come out with five different series of beers. We're going to do, like, everyday beers. We're going to do a little bit more strong beers. We're going to do a Belgian line. We're going to do barrel-aged beers, barrel-aged clean beers, and then sour beers. So we're going to have five different series of beers.
And you've got space for some barrels, too.
Yeah, we do. We're going to have three different coolers, so we're going to put all the sour beers in a cooler and all the barrel-aged beers in a cooler as well, just to temperature control them and keep everything like where it needs to be.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we definitely have space, but, you know, it's amazing. When we first started looking at spaces, we were looking at like 10,000, 8,000 square feet. And then we saw this building, and it was like, wow, 65,000 square feet. We can take half of this. And then you just start thinking about things, and you're like, wow, that building's already filled.
Yeah. Roger, it's really great talking to you, and we're rooting for you. And I swear to God, I'm going to write a letter to the president. But we've also been talking about cooking with beer with Chef Tommy Harder.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite beer and food pairing of your own?
I'm sorry, do I?
Yeah,
do you have a favorite food and beer pairing?
Oh, yeah, I really like Imperial Stouts with chocolate.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, classic.
Yeah,
I don't, you know, it's
it works.
One of my favorites.
Yeah.
That's all you need, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's that and a fire at night, you know, it's I'm done.
Yeah.
The one that always struck me, it was from one of Garrett Oliver's books. It was so simple and basic. You take a good barley wine, and you have it with a good blue cheese. And they really I feel like a good food and food pairing, you actually balance it out.
Nice.
Yeah, that's you do have your Imperial Stout and your chocolate, and then you have the barley wine and the blue cheese, and that's a party.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like a Valentine's date.
Well, I have some Point Reyes at the house. I'll have to go try that.
Yeah. All right.
Go get some Bigfoot on the way home.
So, Tommy, let's talk to Tommy one more time.
Sure.
So Tommy's cooks with beer. So you've got you're doing an Omegang a night coming up. What foods would you do with Omegang?
Omegang just being also a Belgian brewery and stuff like that. I always kind of think about what would do, you know, a classic Belgian dish maybe with them. I have a lot of experience with Omegang because I've also been, you know, to their BCTC and done cooking competitions the last 2 years now. 2 years ago, I took the mussel tussle, which was the Belgium. It was just we had mussels, and there was six different chefs, and we competed. But we all got paired up with one of their beers to use and pair with.
Yeah.
And so it's something like that.
Tommy took that award.
Yeah, they ended up winning that one. Yeah, that one was my big claim to fame that kind of got my whole thing started for me. Really, like it actually got my name out there and stuff. But at something like that too. I mean, I almost thought about maybe bringing it back and doing another mussel dish, but you know, it's just because kind of bringing that.
And then there was one more competition this year in Cooperstown.
Yep.
It was like different chefs pairing with food. What was that competition?
Yeah, that one actually they called it was the Hop Chef. That was this last summer, you know, like was August or whatever when we were up there. And what all the other chefs happened to do is they are in different areas, like Washington D.C. There was one in Baltimore, I think. And one in Albany, they actually had these competitions, and all these chefs won that competition to come to BCTC to compete for the the main event, the grand finale. And since I won the year before, I came back as well. So it was me and three other chefs. And that one was something that's totally different. We actually could plan out our dish. We had just like a basically a stipend.
So what was your menu? Because I remember you did something good.
Yeah, I made actually a play on a like a basically like a you know crab cake, but I used braised duck. So you know, kind of in the same you know form, you know, it'd be kind of shaped in the same way, but instead of using fish or you know seafood or something like that, I actually used braised duck legs. And I cooked them in the Abbey Ale. And that was the other thing, too, about the competition, is that we could choose whatever beer we wanted to out of the Omegon range of beers to pair with. We didn't get specifically, like, I got paired up with this beer or I got paired up with the Wit or whatever. So I chose the Abbey Ale. Thought it'd be something to be different and something that we could, you know, that would like maybe stick out because usually a lot of people only know really more of, like, the Hennepin or the Omegon Wit. They're like, oh, if I do something different, maybe I'll kind of, like, stick out a little bit. So with that, I actually infuse a lot of flavors that are also like you can kind of find and taste already in the Abbey of like sun-dried tomatoes and figs and you know different like ingredients like that. Like they're just naturally kind of present in the beer itself. They also, I mean, Omegon's kind of crazy too, is that they do a lot of their beers. They do add other flavors into like the cooking process or the beer brewing process. You know, they'll add coriander seeds or whatever to which beer it was. And so that one, like, I already kind of had standing out, but I did a duck cake, but I also infused it with a lot of foie gras, and I made also a foie gras mousse that also was infused with figs, and then made a sauce out of the braising liquid, the Abbey Ale braising liquid, and made into a mole, using basically different kinds of chili peppers and all that kind of stuff. So there was a lot of things going on. Finished it all off. I took the duck skin and made those into some cracklings. Kind of get a little crispy and some go on top. So there was, like I said, a lot of things going on. But I unfortunately did not take the winning. I got third, I guess, in that competition.
Yeah, I think the judges were prejudiced, you know. But I was one of the judges. Sorry. We had a cool guys. We had guys from Star Chefs and Savoy Magazine. It was a pretty big-time thing. I mean, if you haven't been, listeners, check out every summer. It's the Omegang's Belgian Comes to Cooperstown event. Jen goes up every year. I go up. Dave Broderick.
Yeah. It's really the
best beer event.
Yeah.
And Roger, hopefully, you know, next time you might come out in August yourself, you'd have a great time.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. I'm suddenly very hungry.
You know, you guys out west, what's the big when everyone goes to the desert and Burning Man,
yeah.
You got Burning Man, we got Belgium Comes to Cooperstown.
It's a little different.
Yeah. It's a little more civilized.
Burning Man, I'd rather go to Cooperstown.
Yeah, Cooperstown.
Yeah, there's a great farm museum with hop exhibits. It's really, if you want to take a beer trip in the summer, I really recommend going to Cooperstown because the farm museum's great and they really have this working hop area and you can learn about, that was the you know, the headquarters of hop growing in the Northeast in the 1800s.
And I've already determined when I moved to the West Coast that the one event a year that will mark my annual visit back to the New York region is going to be BCTC. It's hands down the best.
It wouldn't be the same without, and Jen, we know you have something secret and big coming up in the next couple
of weeks.
I
have something that I can't announce officially until tomorrow, and it kills me because it's really fun.
But next week we'll mention it.
I'm going to do my best to kick ass.
All right, I'm going to do a shout-out, too. Actually, tonight in New York, a number of our guests, including Sam Merritt, Mary Isaac, and myself, we were a part of this weird panel last year. We sat in with Mr. George Riedel, the ultimate dean of glassware in America. They were deciding on the proper shape for a Spiegelau IPA glass. And there's a party tonight at Nomad Hotel in Manhattan. And I'm going to go there after the show. And we'll see what he picked, Mr. George Riedel himself picked for the IPA glass. It's going to be fun. And Sam Colagioni from Dogfish Head is going to be there. So what we're trying to do out here is get you guys interested in all these fun things. Coming up, one thing Beer Sessions Radio is producing for the New York City Beer Week for the third annual New York City Brewers Choice. Dave Broderick, the Blind Tiger owner, is curating all the beers. It's mostly Northeast regional brewers. The brewers will be there with their top beers, pouring it themselves with great food pairings. And it's a super
event.
There's only a couple hundred tickets left. So if I were you, it's still $60. It's a great event. It's probably the best event of New York City Beer Week.
In New York City.
In New York City.
Yeah, I'm happy to see you and also be part of it as well.
Thank you, Tommy. And I wanted to ask you, you didn't tell me what you were going to cook.
Oh, yes. I'm still...
Did you figure it out yet tonight?
Yeah. I'm thinking of actually doing some braised pork belly. It's going to be the main of the dish. So
can't lose with that.
I think you should make your duck crab cakes.
Well, I did that once, so I got to do something different.
All right.
Roger, I just got this photo, and the view from the brewery is phenomenal.
Did you get that?
I got that. It's incredible. Everyone's going to have to visit this place.
Jen, we can put it if you can email it up, we can put it on our Facebook or something.
Yeah, I will. I'll get this to you. But
just imagine having a deck out there.
I know. It's like the biggest deck ever. Oh, it'll be fantastic.
And the beauty is there's runways out there, and there's a bird that's endangered that lives out there, so they'll never build on that.
Oh,
nice. Awesome. Hey, guys, we're going to have to wrap it up. We've got another show coming on. It's Erica Wild. She's got a great show on after us. But again, get your tickets for New York City Brewer's Choice. It's at City Winery in New York City, February 27th. It's the featured event of the New York City Beer Week. Go to goodbeerseal.com for tickets. And in closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who've helped to bring the podcast to you tonight. And Beer Sessions Radio is also supported by the Good Beer Seal. Thanks to Jen, Tommy, and Roger for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Brie O'Connor, and our engineer, Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
And Roger, say hi to Claudia for me.
All right, on Beer Sessions Radio.
Good luck to you, Roger. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.